As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
A late Old Trafford winner from a veteran Portuguese star, the result sealed by a magnificent save from one of the Premier League's most informed goalkeepers. Sadly, that's a description of Wolves' win, their first on our turf since 1980.
It's a cross cleared by Jones. Moutinho!
New year, same old Manchester United. Welcome to Talk of the Devils, a Manchester United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. I'm Ian Irving, and holding the fort with us tonight is United We Stand editor and Athletic contributor, of course, Andy Mitten. Hi, Andy. I was at Old Trafford. You were over in Spain, but I think we both had the same view of that.
Yeah, we did. I've been back for all the games over Christmas, well, the ones which took place, and I had to cover Barcelona on whenever it was. I'm losing track of days. But yeah, I watched it on the television, and I feel like it was a big blow. Before we get into it, I'd like to wish everyone a happy new year, including yourself, mate. That might be the only positive you hear from me this evening.
There might be some positives when we talk about Phil Jones, possibly. But as we usher in a new year on Talk of the Devils, there was an unpleasantly familiar feeling to that result and performance, unfortunately, at Old Trafford. I was at the game, like I say, and in Laurie Whitwell's absence, I spoke in some depth with our match reporter, Adam Crafton. So we're sat in the press box with Adam Crafton, of course, from The Athletic. You can still just about make out the hum of the mowers cleaning up the mess on the Old Trafford pitch. There was quite a lot of mess. From a Manchester United perspective, Adam, wasn't it? Wasn't very good, that, was it?
No, it was. Well, I mean, it was as bad as anything that we've seen since Ralf Rangnick came in as manager. Very difficult to find positives tonight for Manchester United. It was really, really poor. I think, you know, I think it took them about 70 minutes to win a corner. One shot on target. Up until that point, it was really, really poor, and really only one chance created, which Bruno Fernandes managed to hit against the bar. And a night which I think left supporters wondering what exactly Rangnick's trying to do with the team. That, you know, they were neither pressing nor not pressing, quite easy to play against, a lot of spaces in the middle of the pitch for Wolves to exploit, and when Wolves scored the goal, they absolutely deserved it.
Yeah, Ralf Rangnick spoke in the press conference a moment ago, which we were both listening to. He didn't say a great deal in terms of explaining what was wrong, but it's clear that he's not happy with what's happening at the minute. But far more candid was Luke Shaw's interview with Sky Sports as well, and I've just spoken to him myself too. He said that he felt at times that the players weren't all there together on the pitch. He said to me several times as well that he felt they were lacking intensity. I mean, we're at the point where we're getting a Luke Shaw crisis candid interview, Adam, aren't we?
Yeah, and it's completely baffling in terms of the intensity. I mean, you're playing at Old Trafford in front of 70,000 people. I can never understand how a team can't start with intensity. You know, you watch any of those other top six teams and they generally give you a level of intensity and urgency that we just don't see from Manchester United. How many games have we seen, you know, over the last year and a half where they just do not start properly? And when you don't start properly, you get yourself into a situation where it's very hard to then pick yourself back up. And that's the recurrent theme. I think there's questions that come out of it. Obviously, Bruno Fernandes didn't start today. Came on, probably made United better when he was on the pitch. But then you have other situations that are really intriguing. You know, Ralph Rangnick, when he first came in, it looked like Dalot and Tellez were going to be the fullbacks. Now Wan-Bissaka and Shaw have started two games in a row. What's the plan there? Matic appears to have overtaken Fred on the basis of half a game against Burnley where United were all right. And it feels like every decision that's being made at the moment is almost reacting to what we've just seen. And, you know, Rangnick came in with this 4-2-2-2 system where we were told he was going to have two number 10s. That then became a straight up 4-4-2 where, you know, for much of the first half today, and I think against Burnley as well, you had Greenwood and Sancho almost hugging the touchline. And then at half time it became a 5-3-2 or a 3-5-2, however you want to describe it. It seems like the manager's struggling for an identity for these players, and the players themselves, as Luke Shaw has said, there doesn't seem to be this collective spirit. Once United went a goal down, even a goal down, you think it's Old Trafford, you've got maybe 15 minutes left, including injury time. Go and create a chance. Go and make something happen.
Put them under some sort of pressure.
And there was none of that. It was really comfortable. It felt like there was a lot of different individuals trying to instigate something by themselves. I mean, Ronaldo showed the most urgency he did in the entire game, actually, when Wolves scored, sort of gesturing for the ball to get back to the halfway line. And then sort of flapping his hands around a bit. And it's all, you know, it's all quite sad. And Rangnick's got a decision to make in terms of, I think he has to try and settle on a team and a system and go with it for a few games. I mean, he can't just keep chopping and changing the system within games, in between games. And he's got a decision to make in terms of, I think he can only play with one of those two up front. And, you know, it's one of the questions of the season, isn't it? Can you make a competitive Manchester United team out of the individual that's Ronaldo? And how does that work with Fernandes and Cavani and Sancho? I mean, Sancho, so I'm rambling now, but Sancho tonight was absolutely appalling. He was awful. As bad as Rashford's been at different points in the season, offered very, very little. Equally, I have sympathy for him because he's not a wing-back and he's playing wing-back second half. So, yeah, I mean, Mason Greenwood's probably the most lively United player taken off after an hour. So, yeah.
Yeah, we need to talk about that Mason Greenwood change, definitely, because it was probably, I say probably, it was definitely the first sign of sort of disquiet from the fans inside Old Trafford. We're both here, we both heard a number of boos, really, for a substitution, which, considering we're only a few weeks into Rangnick's reign, it wasn't really a great sign, that, was it, from supporters. But I was sort of thinking as well, if Greenwood was the answer in terms of bringing him off, what was the problem that the manager saw?
Well, I think Rangnick said in his press conference that it was a decision between Greenwood and Cavani. That's the way he saw it. I mean, I think other people watching would have asked, well, why wouldn't it be a decision also that involved Sancho and Ronaldo? I mean, either would have been fair to take off, I think, at that point. I think you also, you know, so he went with Cavani because maybe Cavani's more likely to nick a goal than Greenwood, which seems reasonably fair. But as for Greenwood, it's, you know, he was lively. He wasn't fantastic. He was just lively, made a couple of things happen on the half turn. But again, you know, it's not as though he was playing out of his skin. I did watch him tonight. I was impressed by him physically, the way he held off players a few times. And it made me just think, you know, with the way he started the season through the middle, that he's actually probably physically strong enough now to play through the middle. And that creates, again, that same debate about, are they playing the right players through the middle to set the tone for a performance? I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo is an unbelievable individual player and, you know, deserves all the respect for that. But I think Ralph Rangnick might be coming towards a point where he has to make a decision, you know, am I picking a team that gets me the best results because maybe I could get the job for a couple of years? Or am I trying to develop a style, a level of performance for this team that can then be taken on? And I think if he takes the latter view, it might be the case that he starts playing with some of those younger forwards and trusting them and trying to develop a bit more of a spirit in the team.
Yeah, that was one alarming thing, really, from the centre-forwards and the attacking players as well. Between Sancho, Greenwood, Cavani and Ronaldo, there didn't seem to be much of a relationship or understanding in that game. Let's finish on a high note, if it is a high note. I think it is, considering what Phil Jones has been through over the course of the last 2 years. His first appearance for 708 days. Not even played a minute of football between the start at Tranmere and the FA Cup in January 2020 and here tonight. We can both say we were here to see him make his return. I think he deserves so much credit for the battle that he's had mentally and physically to get himself back out there on the pitch. And actually, you could probably say he was Manchester United's man of the match, couldn't you?
Yep. He was really good. And it's great, you know, it's great for him in terms of, you know, 2 years out. And that's really hard for a player. I think, you know, he's almost been reduced to a meme. Hasn't he? You know, for a year and a half, 2 years, and that's pretty horrible.
Even before that, in fairness.
Even before that, yeah, he's had, you know, a difficult period. He was never going to reach the standard that Alex Ferguson set out for him when he, you know, said he could be one of the greatest players in the history of the club. But equally, he's not been as bad as people have made out at times as well. Probably not as bad as I've made out at times. As exasperating as, you know, some individual performances can be at different moments. I thought tonight he did really well against a difficult player and Jimenez, a physical player. I thought him and Varane actually looked quite good together as a partnership. But, yeah, I mean, it's really as good as it got, isn't it, for United? The goalkeeper was good again. The goalkeeper's always good at the moment. The goalkeeper always has a lot to do. But, you know, Phil, I don't really know. Where does Phil Jones go from here? I mean, I still don't think he'll be playing every week if Maguire and Lindelof are fit. Bailly will come back as well from the African Cup of Nations. So, I mean, maybe they keep him around for the rest of the season. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Newcastle were watching tonight.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity to put himself in the shop window as well. I was down pitch side as well working for the Premier League and saw Phil Jones walk off. He looked very emotional as he went off the pitch. He got a big ovation from the Stretford end and from the Red Army in that corner as well. It was a really lovely moment. But in terms of what's next for United then, Adam?
Yeah, just to go back on Jones for a second. I mean, the fans were really supportive of him before the game. They were singing his name with Spando Ballet. His first few touches, and also he did a really powerful interview a few months ago where he was just talking about, you know, what it's like to see that criticism online and how draining and dehumanising that is at time. And I think he spoke at the time about, you know, these kids sat in their bedroom eating pot noodle, playing the PlayStation, while he's out here representing Manchester United at the highest level. So, yeah, great night for him individually. What was the point you'd have said?
Doesn't matter. Phil Jones is back, and there's a few people choking on their cold pot noodles now in their bedrooms. It's been great to speak to you for Talk of the Devils, Adam. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, great to hear from Adam and great to see him at the game, Andy. The risk of sort of going all over it again, I think there's one question I can probably sum up, really. The feeling inside the ground, the feeling I've seen on social media, I've heard on the radio, it's probably going through your mind as well, Andy. Are United making progress under this interim manager?
It's hard to say that United are making progress because the result and performance against Wolves was the low point of Ralf Rangnick's time at Old Trafford so far. But let's not kid ourselves. United were hardly convincing in the wins against Crystal Palace, the draw against Young Boys. the away win at Norwich was partly because David De Gea was so good. The draw at Newcastle was really, really disappointing. The high point was scoring free at home to a Burnley side who can't win any matches. But no, it is still early for the manager, and I don't want to be too hard on him, but I've seen a palpable lack of a new bounce, which comes with a new manager. It tends to happen. A great example of that was when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came in, or even when Louis van Gaal came in, that pre-season, everyone looked completely different at the start, and then the proper game started under Van Gaal. But under Mourinho, it was an encouraging start. But nah, I'm worried. I thought that result against Wolves and that performance was not a surprise. I'm worried about the tactics, the individuals. I'm worried about what I hear from within the club. And results, as Ralf Rangnick said many times, they set the mood. And I think he speaks really well. I think he's excellent with the media. I think he's honest. But I said when we first spoke of him, he's got a really, really tough job. And I've not changed my opinion there.
No, and he sort of acknowledged tonight as well that the job is just as tough as he thought it would be in terms of trying to turn things around at Manchester United. Just picking up on something you said there, Andy, can you share anything about what you've heard about what's happening behind the scenes, or the tone or the mood of that at all?
We've got a new manager coming in, and I did a piece for The Athletic a couple of weeks ago. He's lost three coaches. And when I wrote that piece, it was against the grain because fans were saying, well, we've got a new manager, everything's great. But he didn't want Michael Carrick to leave. He didn't want Kieran McKenna to leave or Martin Pert to leave. So if you lose three of the people who've been coaching the players every single day and expect things just to carry on seamlessly, well, I'm told it just doesn't work like that. The problem is fans associate those three, more so Kieran and Michael, with a perceived failure of the management under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And you hear phrases like, good riddance, get rid of them all. Well, they've all gone. They weren't got rid of. I mean, Ole was sacked. And new coaches have come in with no experience of coaching in the Premier League, coaching in the half light of a Mancunian winter, under really trying circumstances with COVID, with the training ground being locked down. And you've got these new personalities coming in. You've got players who want to leave. You've got players jockeying for position. And again, the team's winning, all of this pales and fades away. But when the team's not winning and the team is not playing well, then it becomes a more problematic environment. You players also know that the manager is likely to be leaving at the end of the season. And I'm no psychologist, but I do wonder whether some of them are thinking beyond this season. And we can see the evidence on the pitch. We saw after the game against Wolves an interview which Luke Shaw did. And the final line of that interview I thought was really telling.
Like I said, it's just tough and disappointing, but we have time now to refocus back. We got a long training week, and you know, maybe the manager can bring some more ideas that what he wants on the pitch.
His body language when he was saying that, he looked really defeated because the team had been defeated. But for a player to say that, I thought that was quite pointed. And you can put this on the players because you can say the players are not doing what they should do, but they're having to adjust to a new tactical system or systems mid-season. And it's a struggle. United have not played a proper good side yet under the new manager, and that mini bounce under Michael Carrick where he got that really good result against Villarreal, beat Arsenal, drew away at Chelsea, that has now long gone. And yet had United beaten Wolves, the top four, which looked pretty difficult only a week ago, suddenly comes right back into focus. And I tweeted that I've started working out what the league table is going to be like when Manchester United win the games in hand, because I just assume that United will win the games in hand. More for me, it's like an illness. What evidence have I got, given how disappointing this season has been, for Manchester United to be winning the games in hand? It's been a poor season pretty consistently. And that's such a blow, because I was so up for this season. Second last year, really good signings going into this season, and it's been really poor. We're probably 20 goals down on the same point of last season. Clearly, we're a lot lower in the league because United were top or about to become top a year ago. The squad is packed with world-class players, and the league table doesn't lie. It's just so frustrating. The team are creating so few chances. You can't even get corners. I think Wolves had 9 corners to 1, which United had at Old Trafford in that defeat. So, and it's dull. It's really dull, Ian. The football is really, really dull. And that worries me.
Yeah, and you sort of, you heard it in Old Trafford tonight, the return of the chance, attack, attack, attack. Adam and I reflected on the negative reaction to the decision to take off Mason Greenwood first from that attacking quartet that wasn't quite finding its feet in the game. And unfortunately, Andy, as well, the recurring themes from the matches that you will have been at over Christmas, that I've been at over Christmas as well, lots on The Athletic at the minute, reflecting on what's been a disappointing Christmas period for Manchester United. Even the results at times haven't been the worst. Laurie Whitwell, who'll be back soon with us on this podcast, wrote after Newcastle about the system, the 4-2-2-2, which has since been tweaked, of course. And tonight it was tweaked in-game. They didn't start with that system. They didn't end with that system either. I'm not sure what they ended with, really. There were so many changes in that second half in particular. Phil Buckingham, after the Burnley game, wrote about how impressive Scott McTominay was in that game and has been recently. He started every single Premier League game under the interim manager Rangnick, so it's interesting to see his emergence as well. We'll talk to you, Andy, about that in a minute. And also a nice sentence for me to say here as well, Carl Anker's back and he's writing about Manchester United as well. It'll be good to have him back on this podcast very soon too, so look out for that. Now 2022 is here. Also reflecting on Burnley and the system and using Cavani and everything else, but let's talk about a positive then, Andy. Scott McTominay, has he looked better to you in this system? He certainly did in that Burnley game, a little bit more freedom to get forward, and it looks like he's been practising his shooting as well.
Yeah, I don't think the Wolves game was the best example, but it was the 10th Premier League game on the trot which he's started. I don't think any others have started that many recently. And I did a piece for The Athletic on him a couple of weeks ago where I spoke to a lot of people who know him and I got pretty glowing assessments. And not every Manchester United fan wanted to hear that because he's a player who divides fan opinions. But I thought he was really, really good against Burnley. And against Wolves, United's midfield was pretty poor. United's midfield is another issue which we can talk about as well. But lots of them players gave the ball away too much against Wolves. I do stats. I watch the games very closely, and normally your player passing percentages will be in the 90s. Against Wolves, Luke Shaw 72, Jadon Sancho 73, Cavani 72, Ronaldo 77, Phil Jones 90. Way, that may be the good thing we can talk about. But I think Scott, I like Scott. I think he's a good person. He's a good player. I like his backstory. I like the way that he's overcome obstacles and just keeps going and going. No, he's not technically the best central midfielder in the world. You could argue that he shouldn't even be starting every single week for Manchester United compared to the past greats who've played in that position, but he's not a problem for Manchester United at the moment. He brings more than he takes away from that team. I'm just more worried that the Manchester United team he plays for doesn't look like the Manchester United team I would like to recognise.
No, it was a tough comparison for McTominay and Nemanja Matic in that midfield up against Neves and Moutinho as well, who ran the show at Old Trafford, certainly in that first half. Before we move on then, Andy, I spoke to Adam about him, but I need to speak to you about him as well. Phil Jones being back in a Manchester United shirt, fit, playing well as well. I said this to Adam, he's pretty much man of the match in that game, and it helped the way the fans got behind him as well. They were cheering his every touch, his every action in that first half, just to sort of G him up and enjoy the moment. I just think he deserves so much credit for fighting back and everything that he's been through. And no matter what happens in the future now, the fact that he's come back, he's made a start, he's made an impact, and he's returned to the first team at United. It's such a big deal, isn't it?
It's been a long time coming, and I knew he'd get a good response. And I got a call from BBC Radio 5 just before the game started asking me to talk about him. And I said, he will get a good response. And the presenter said, really? I said, yeah, he absolutely will, because he's not wished to be injured. He's been really unfortunate. And he's had a lot of criticism, especially online. And the criticism seems to be that he's injured and he's picking up a wage. Well, he doesn't want to be injured. No footballers want to be injured. I thought he was Manchester United's best player against Wolves.
He was, yeah.
And right from the start as well. Made a clearance after 7 minutes. And he was Jose Mourinho's first choice central defender in Premier League matches. And I don't think he's a Varane class defender. But he was better than Varane against Wolves. Varane didn't have a bad game either. And he's 29 years old. He's the I think he's the longest serving player. He came in that summer, 2011, when David De Gea came. And he's had some great games for Manchester United. He's just had a terrible last couple of years. And I remember writing about him more regularly when he was playing more regularly. And in one of my articles, totaling up the different types of injuries he had, it was like 14 different types. And you wouldn't wish that on anyone. And people say, yeah, he's got all this money. That argument just doesn't hold any weight for me. I'd love to see him not be injured and to enjoy his football and to show people what a decent player is. And whether that's at Manchester United is probably doubtful. But he was shown tonight that squads are needed because players get injured, especially now when we've got the COVID issues around football. Managers are needing all the players that they can have. And he stepped in tonight and he stepped up. So that was about the only bright spot. Maybe David De Gea had another good game, but he's only having good games because United are conceding far too many chances.
Yeah, it's almost a barometer of Manchester United's poor form, isn't it, when David De Gea starts being the player of the month again, and he's been player of the month the last 2 months, so read into that what you will. I need to remind you at this point, you can subscribe to The Athletic now with a 33% discount. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. You get full access to all the great Manchester United writing that we've been speaking about on this podcast and also ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcast, including our Sir Alex Ferguson special to celebrate his 80th birthday and all the articles, of course, related to that as well. So make your way to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod and sign up now for a third off a subscription.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, the January transfer window is now open and United can feasibly, at this point, they might even make an announcement while we're doing this podcast, Andy. Maybe not. They can look to strengthen, though, this month, can't they, in this squad and sort of see if Rangnick can put some sort of stamp on it. He certainly has, in his comments about players not leaving, very, very strong in his comments about Edinson Cavani and Donny van de Beek not leaving Manchester United during the January transfer window. Like you said before, he's speaking well, isn't he? He's saying the right sorts of things. It's just on the pitch where there's a bit of a mistranslation, maybe.
Yeah, it's dull football. This 4-2-2-2, it's just not working. I can't see any momentum with it. Manchester United changed formations at home against Wolves. I'm baffled by this. And the crowd are not stupid and they won't get on the manager's back yet. But if this continues, they will get on the manager's back. And it's not just on the manager. It's on the players as well. But it's also on the manager. He's been brought in and talked a fantastic story and had a glowing CV. And he's expected to act upon that. He's paid a lot of money to get Manchester United clicking again. And that is not happening. United are really labouring against the poorer team, just not even creating chances. It's not even exciting. I think Wolves had 19 shots against 9 for Manchester United. And this is against poor teams. Wolves are not a poor team. Wolves were decent, but Wolves are not a team who are renowned for creating chances. So it could very quickly turn sour if results do not improve. If United go out of the FA Cup to Aston Villa, if United get hammered against the better teams, because the fixture list so far has been pretty forgiving. In terms of transfers, well, Anthony Martial wants to leave. We know that. We know that Paul Pogba is running out of time on his contract. We know that Jesse Lingard has been frustrated about his lack of minutes. So every player's got a different set of circumstances. I think fans would like to say, well, who are we going to bring in? And I think United are not going to be bringing, don't plan to bring anybody in unless it becomes an emergency. Like when Bruno Fernandes came in, the season was dying on its backside and Bruno was brought in and he totally changed the season actually. But United's squad is still too big. Ronaldo wasn't expected to come at the start of this year. There are a lot of players there. Axel Tuanzebe, who hasn't figured this season because he's been at Villa, he's likely to go to Napoli. It'd be great if he can do well. For Napoli and do well in Italy like Chris Smalling has done. But I don't think he's someone who we'd be thinking about as United's future central defender as we might have done a year or two ago. But I'd be surprised if Manchester United were going out and buying players and spending a lot of money in January. I think what United have got to do is get more out of the players that have been brought. Jadon Sancho, we've not mentioned him yet. He's been so disappointing. He was so poor against Wolves. And that's another point of frustration among many others.
Yeah, Adam agreed with you, didn't he? He said exactly the same, that he thought Jadon Sancho was particularly poor. Any truth in this Julian Alvarez link, the River Plate player with Manchester United, Andy?
I'm a bit sus with January rumours because a lot of them come out of agents pushing it. So there was an Ecuadorian player a year ago and I checked it out fully. I think he went to Brighton in the end.
Oh, the central midfielder. I forget his name, but yeah.
It was his agent linking him to Manchester United. So I see the type of outlets reporting on this. And I think a lot of it is clickbait stuff. And I think the idea of Manchester United paying River Plate €86 million for a buyout clause is highly improbable at the moment. I think Rangnick has made it clear that he wants to keep Cavani. Cavani didn't have his best game against Wolves, but he did well when he came on at Newcastle. And if he's half as effective in the second half of this season as he was in the second half of last season, we've got something at least to look forward to. I still think he's a great player. He's just too injury prone or unable to play in enough matches. So I think you'll find a lot of noise about which players might be coming in January, but I do not expect a lot of incoming transfer activity to Manchester United. Have you heard anything, Ian?
No, it's quiet, isn't it? Like you were saying before, there's this uncertainty about how long Rangnick is going to be there and do you give him the keys to Old Trafford and the keys to the transfer kitty if he isn't going to be there beyond the end of the season. Of course, there's also the added issue that there's a transition now between Ed Woodward and Richard Arnold and how that plays out. Going back to the point that we've spoken about so many times in the podcast this season, who is making the decisions, who will make the decisions this January, especially now, like you said as well, the coaches have gone now too. So, you know, people who had quite a big say on the way that Manchester United played and the type of players they would want to bring in have gone too. Very interesting again to see Darren Fletcher on the touchline. He was on the touchline tonight as much as anyone, more so even than Rangnick at times. It's him from the coaches who's stepping forward to bark out the instructions and direct the traffic, so to speak. Is that an issue for United that he's as hands-on as that, Andy? I know we've sort of spoken about him being Manchester United through and through, knowing exactly what's required and being the right sort of character to be in that role. But considering he's needed, isn't he, at a higher level? No?
Yeah, you're talking uncertainty because there's confusion about what his role is now, because Darren was one of the people who interviewed Ralf Rangnick and the other potential candidates for the interim manager role. And then the next time people see him very publicly is sometimes looking like the main man outside the dugout, looking like the manager, even in a more pronounced and prominent role than the actual manager. I've said before, I really respect Darren's way of thinking. I'm glad he's working at Manchester United. I really am. I think he's very talented. I think he could become a very talented manager. He's got the right ingredients there. But at the moment, he's not. He's not got any experience as a top flight manager. So maybe some clarity is needed as to what his role is. But I think it's also a needs must situation. When we lost those names that I mentioned earlier on, no fans wanted to hear that that was a big loss. They just didn't. It was just totally going against the grain of what everyone was thinking. But I'm sorry, that is the truth of it. You have the people taking training every day and then they go. So Darren stepped up, he's there. I'm also told that Ralf Rangnick has been consulting more with Mike Phelan. And Mike Phelan's been there at the club for a long time. And when you hear little bits like this, and when the team are winning, everything is shone through a totally different prism. Oh, good. Yeah, we're winning. Everything's great. What a wise man tapping into that reservoir of knowledge. When we talk about this now, having lost at home to Wolves, that is not, you don't get the same reaction. It's what on earth is going on? And again, it's about results. And the manager knows that. And he said that a couple of times. He's clearly a very sharp man, but he's brought his coaches in. Them coaches have got to win the trust of the players as well. And if them coaches are not known to the players, they've also got a really difficult job as well. So it all seems a little bit confused at the moment. And the manager's not got a huge amount of time to get it together. And one thing I'll go back to, when he first got the job, I said, if he's winning every week, the manager will have complete power. Everybody will bow to his knowledge. Who do you want to bring in? Yeah, we'll give you a bit of money in January. Who do you want to make as manager? But if he's not, the opposite will be true. And it will be like, get this blagger out of the club. So that all still hangs in the balance.
It does a bit.
We had a really bad result against Wolves. But other clubs have had bad results as well. And I hate myself for like watching Liverpool lose against Leicester thinking, might be a little chance here. And don't be stupid. Liverpool put five past United. They're miles better than Manchester United at the moment. Yet United finished above them last year in the league.
You need to go back to being a media-trained Premier League footballer and just say, take it game by game, Andy. Don't look too far ahead of yourself. I've looked at that player, by the way, for Brighton, the Ecuadorian. Moises Caicedo,
that's the one.
Midfielder.
Yeah.
So he signed for Brighton last January and he's now on loan in the Belgian First Division at Beerschot. So, there you go. He's not played a minute for Brighton.
There you go. And there's so much of that in football. And you see it when somebody signs. They're like, they'll see like a 2 or 3 minute clip of his YouTube stuff. And they'll be like, he looks brilliant in. Put him in, give him a gun on the right. I've just seen it so many times where players have come in and they're just not ready or they're bought for the future. And one of them was Donny van de Beek. And I said it on this podcast at the time. I've been given no indication he's going to be a regular Manchester United starter at any point. And he's become a darling. And other clubs have. Barcelona have got a lad called Ricky Pudge, who all the fans think is like, he's the next Messi. It's just waiting to break out. Unfortunately, every single coach he's played under doesn't have that opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a slight issue, isn't it? Right, before we wrap things up then, I think we should mark tonight as well because it was the first time at the game this evening that Manchester United fans were able to stand legally inside Old Trafford to watch the team in nearly 3 decades, actually. Of course, it was the start of the trial for safe standing and the rail seats that had been installed at Old Trafford were used properly for the first time tonight. There was, I think, 1,500 home fans in the old J-stand section in the quadrant between the Sir Alex Ferguson stand and the East stand. And there's also 500 away fans as well. I'd say being at the game, it was still the Red Army dictating things in the opposite corner from a home fan's perspective. But it's encouraging, Andy, isn't it? People are listening. It's a trial that's taking place. It sounds like tonight's gone well, despite the result. It's a step forward, isn't it? You've been right across this story from the start, almost.
I've been writing about this since 1994, when terracing disappeared from Old Trafford. And I used to stand on the terraces myself. I've travelled around the world at grounds and I've stood on terraces and I've been a big advocate of safe standing areas. It's been a long time coming. I think you've got to give Manchester United some credit for being at the forefront of wanting to trial these areas. You say the main area was coming tonight from the Stretford end. You're absolutely right. Nothing really changed in J-Stan because them barriers have been in all season. It just became legal tonight. Fans have been stood in there throughout this season, and I speak to fans in there, and I've spoke to some after the Wolves game. Said it's been really good.
By the way, it wasn't a criticism whatsoever of the fans who were in that section. It's just the fact that the Red Army are so loud now, aren't they?
Yeah, it's coming from there, and that's great. Yeah. That is a traditional vocal heartland. Is the Stretford end? J-Stan's had its moments over the years, and even this season, it's had some really good moments. And there's loads of good Reds who go in there. But people like John Darch, who's a Bristol City fan, he pushed for safe standing more than anyone. Phil Gattenby, a Manchester City fan, was on it a long, long time ago. And I can remember going to Leverkusen and writing about this in 2013 when United played there and making a little TV programme about it. And I remember some people at Manchester United laughing at the idea. I won't name them. Just looking down on the idea, thinking, this doesn't make sense. You want to stand up, but you want to sit down at the same time. Absolutely clueless when it came to fan culture. So I realise Ed Woodward is not a popular man at this moment among United fans. He was really behind bringing in safe standing at Old Trafford. And the fact that it has become a reality is really encouraging, because we've seen at other grounds, like at Celtic or at Shrewsbury, that it does work. And I think people should have a choice whether they can stand up or sit down at matches. And I'm really encouraged. And also by the fact that away fans can stand up as well. I think it's great.
It was definitely a step forward that tonight, and something to keep an eye on, certainly for the future. But that's it for today on Talk of the Devils. The clock has just struck 10:15 on Monday night. It's even later where Andy is over in Barcelona. So thank you, Andy, for being with us. Thank you, everyone at home, for listening as well. Don't forget that 33% discount off a subscription to The Athletic as well. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. We'll be back on Thursday. Laurie Whitwell's back then, Andy. Are you excited about that?
No, I saw him last week in Newcastle. I had a beer with him after the game. And the conversation went something like, do you want a pint, Laurie? He went, no, I'll have them. And he pointed at some drink that I'd never heard of.
Oh, dear.
So I ordered him a glass of this drink. It was like £9. And I'm like, what on earth are you drinking? And it tasted like rats. And he started sipping it like he was like a cool Cockney or whatever. So I want you to pull him up about it this week and ask him what he was drinking.
Well, that's the first anecdote now for Thursday's podcast. And I think everyone will want to tune in to find out exactly what he was drinking that tastes like rats and costed, what, £9, did you say?
It cost £9. I mean, he's got a bit of a dodgy history and you need to pull him up on this. He's talked about mixing Coke with orange and now he's ordered this £9 drink. And
well, you know, he's penchant for Swedish parties with crayfish as well. So I feel like we've got quite a lot to digest on Thursday's podcast. And we might even be able to squeeze in a preview to the Aston Villa FA Cup tie as well. We're hoping for better, aren't we? Ralf Rangnick will have his players on that training pitch all week. They've got a full week to prepare for that game. And in the meantime, we'll be back on Thursday finding out exactly what on earth Laurie Whitwell was drinking up at Newcastle. But Andy, thank you. Thank you again to everyone for listening at home. And then for everyone at Talk of the Devils, Happy New Year, I think.
The Athletic.